This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 43 of the All Souls Podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
And we still hope to one day have a better sounding entree, but that's what we have for today.
I think at this point, if we tried to change it, people would be like, what?
No, I don't think so. I think they'd be yay, but that doesn't mean...
Yeah, but would we go back?
No, it's called As You Go Forward, As You Know Better, Do Better. I mean, we've been knowing better since day one, but we just can't do better yet. So we'll continue to... Well, I guess we don't know better. We know enough to know that we would love a better entree, but we haven't come up with anything yet. If you guys have any guesses,
you mean intro? Every time you say entree, I'm thinking like food. I would always like a better entree.
We're just doing a sponsor spot talking about food, so for our other show, so maybe.
I'm doing 100% of all of the cooking these days. I would like a better entree. And by better entree, I mean one cooked by someone else.
And basically anything cooked by someone else.
Pretty much. That to me is a luxury right now.
So do we have any announcements?
I mean, you know, we didn't really talk about it. We just kind of like flubbed? Or talked about it briefly. We didn't talk about it is my point. We kind of mentioned it, that castings for season 3 that they've already filmed and released. But we never actually...
You mean when they ended filming and wrapped?
Yeah, and then started telling everybody.
And then a week or so later, they dumped like 24 new characters on us.
Right, but we never really discussed the fact that they've recast Baldwin.
I know.
Because he was busy. And I get it, because I saw him cast, and I think it's in The Nevers. Is he in The Nevers? With Donnelly, Laura Donnelly?
Something that's being filmed in New Zealand?
Maybe it's not The Nevers. I'll have to look it up.
I think so. Or, sorry. Maybe not New Zealand, but it had to do something with Lord of the Rings franchise?
Maybe that's it. Maybe, is he in the Amazon Lord of the Rings franchise that they're doing?
I think so. It was something about LOTR.
He was busy and I was sad about it. I didn't even think about it much this season because he hasn't been in a whole lot of it. But the last couple of episodes, he's had some pretty meaty scenes and I'm just like, I mean, it's not like they're going to play it off like a witch made his face look different. So I mean, we're just gonna all have to be like accepting of the fact that it's not Tristan Grable anymore.
We will be accepting, but you know what, you can be completely supportive and accepting of the new actor and recognize it's not his fault. We're very happy to have him and congratulatory that he has this great opportunity, that he's coming into such a great franchise as ending, or at least thus far ending. There's nothing wrong with being disappointed that we don't have our Baldwin. We're human. It's okay.
No.
You know, as long as we're not, you and I haven't at least, we're not bitching and moaning about, like, we're not butt hurt. We're disappointed because we love the guy and we would love to see him finish Baldwin. But you know what? Stuff happens. COVID happens. And you know what? It changed a lot of schedule.
Well, it's true. But given that, you know, Dick Baldwin is back in full force in this episode, and we'll talk about it, because they made Baldwin likable in season 1, which is long before he was likable in the books. He didn't really become likable in the books for me until like book 3. So, and it's a very...
Until book 3. Which is even sadder because that's where we all want to see him.
I know. So maybe when Baldwin starts doing good deeds, he looks completely different. Maybe that's his good deed face. I don't know.
Oh, Lord. Like, okay, hold on a second. Are you trying to say that just like, although we never saw a picture of her before, just like Isabeau supposedly, like once she lost Philippe, like all her aging caught up with her? And you're saying that once he does starts to do good, that he magically twinkles into...
I mean, how else are you going to explain it other than just not explaining it at all? I mean, they're not going to explain it. They're just going to pretend.
Casting, Summer. Scheduling.
I don't care about that. You're being realistic. And I'm not talking realism. I am talking show.
You know what I thought? And I'm sure I don't know what they do anymore because I haven't watched these types of shows in literally decades. But in the 80s and early 90s, when I was stuck on a few shows such as Santa Barbara, Days of Our Lives, and something else a little bit of, but mostly Santa Barbara and Days of Our Lives, when they would bring someone in, because, you know, unless they killed someone off, and even that was no excuse, they brought people back from the dead. So that didn't even mean anything. But typically, unless someone was killed off
for now.
If they had to have a new actor for whatever reason come in, but playing the same part, like obviously, no, they didn't drop a ball, right? They come on. They have like this moment on screen where they put the words under the face, under the bottom of the screen, and it says the role of Stephanie is now being played by Sabrina McKinsey or whatever. So I made all of that up. But my point is the names. As soon as you're talking about that, I thought we're going to get the first, we won't. The first scene of Baldwin in season three, there's going to be like the soap opera line under his face.
I would prefer the voiceover saying, tonight playing the role of.
Oh, yeah, they did that. I think they did that too.
I think they did.
You know what? You know what the least they could do? Because he could phone that in. They need to have the guy who played Baldwin do that VO.
But he's not gonna, and they're not gonna. They're going to just hope that we all will suspend our disbelief and assume that Baldwin had a facelift.
No, 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 hold on. Okay, I'm gonna say something else, and I you understand what I'm saying. I promise you, I'm not being bitchy or pissy. I think it's funny. So note that first of all, they rapped before they announced it, right? So obviously they knew. Oh, did they know? Duh. They knew all the scheduling conflicts before they started filming, or before at least his first scene would have been, because they had to cast someone, right? So obviously they've known this for months, maybe for a year. Who knows? I just think it's funny that... I don't know why.
They waited until after they'd wrapped to tell everybody?
Yes! 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 Because they could... I mean... Not that they were worried necessarily, because there's nothing to worry about. Like, they do the best they can. It's no one's fault. It just happens. But it's funny, not haha, but kind of interesting, I guess, that they do wait until they wrap. And like, not only are they done, there's no more like going back and switchy. There's no switchies, switchbacks, whatever, tradebacks. But also just in case part of the fandom was upset, they didn't want it affecting filming. Now, I'm not saying that they felt that way, but, and I think what they did was smart. Imagine being pulled in and playing this great role and not being able to say anything while you're filming.
No, or you're like, oh, what are you doing now? Oh, I just got cast in A Discovery of Witches. Oh, really? I love that show. Who are you playing? Baldwin. No, you're not. That's played by somebody else. You must have your character name mistaken. That's already been cast. But, you know, say lovey. It is what it is. Let's talk about this week's episode. So this week we are discussing episode 208. There is no title, as always.
So, another episode written by Pete McTee. He was the one who wrote My Beloved, My Favorite, 206.
I was like, none of them have titles. We just went over this. We do not have an episode called My Beloved.
It is My Beloved. I'm not saying that's the title. So, we open in London. This is definitely an all over the place episode. I mean, it's fine. We love it. So, we open in London, 1591. They're back. So, they traveled back from Bohemia. And they have the book. Which is still, as Diana's looking at it, it's like still swirly and moving around and like nebulous. And it's still all swirly whirly for Diana. She's in her bed reading. And as she's communicating to Matthew, any time of day.
Well, but she's finally getting to do the thing she wanted to do in Oxford in the 2000s.
Yeah, to sit with it.
Is, you know, have as much time as she wants to discover what's in this broken book.
And it's resisting her, she says. And so she can't really do. And she feels weird, she says. And Matthew says, or thinks, that it's the book making her ill.
Is it, though?
I mean... We'll find out. He has to practically force her to stop working with it or looking at it to go eat something.
He has to call her mon coeur.
Yeah, and that gets her to stop.
In a very sexy way. My love.
Present day, we are in Venice. Knox is talking about a letter by Edward Kelly. So this is what he was seeing at that museum at the end of the last episode.
Yes.
Or two episodes ago.
And then cue Peter Knox making all kinds of excuses as to why he wasn't able to touch the book.
Yeah. So he tells Javert about the three pages torn out of the Book of Life. And he says, in this letter, Kelly claims to have given a page to each of the three species. It's not that each page necessarily belonged or mentioned a certain species. It's that he gave one page to each species. And that is how it became the witch's page, the demon's page, the vampire's page. And so he describes what he found in this letter. So he does have the letter. And they want one of the pages to be able, I think it was Gerbert, but he says having one of these pages might enable us to go to the Bodleian and recall the book. Like, they want the pages no matter what, but they think one of the things it might do for them is to help them get a hold of the book. Where they be? Where be these pages? Gerbert says he will speak to Isabeau. He thinks they might have the witch's page or something. She might at least know. Satour.
I'm not done with Peter now. Peter Knox is so full of himself that there is no other reason that he could not physically have called that book up himself than that she must have a page.
Oh, yeah.
She must have something extra, not internally, but something extra in her hands that's giving her something that I don't have. Like, there's no other reason. Like, it's not that she's more powerful than him. It's not that she is more capable of things than him. That couldn't possibly be the reason. It's not that, you know, because there's no way that this little slip of a whatever that that he tested while she was spellbound as a child should be able to do something magically that he can't. It's just the excuse train that he's on is like choo-choo, is like full steam ahead. And it's like, I don't know, him trying to like force these excuses on other people. Well, that must be the reason why we can't do it. Clearly, that's not the case. I mean, we know, but I just find him to be comical and male.
So we are then taken to set tour.
Speaking of a page,
we get the theme, the main theme of the show, as she is looking at one of the pages. Of course, it's the top of the Pyrex opening. So then we get the Pyrex opening. After the Pyrex opening,
do you know that I have been watching this show on my phone almost exclusively until last week, wherein I, for the very first time, saw that what you were talking about with the word Pyrex.
Yeah, can't blame me.
It was just too small. I didn't notice it. So I need you to know that every time you've said Pyrex, and I made you explain it to me twice because I was like, what are you talking about?
Okay, so
I got it.
Present day Oxford.
I'm on board.
I love it. I'm not even going to name the band because I'm going to have it wrong, but we get
New Order.
Oh, okay. Then I definitely go with it. I was about to say.
The song is called True Faith.
Okay. I was about to say In Excess, but see, I was wrong.
Oh, you were wrong. That's so wrong. They don't even sound the same.
Fired. I just said I was going to get it wrong. I know the song of the song, but I couldn't tell you the band unless it was, because I was not a big, I like music, but I've never been into pop music. I've always been into soundtracks and some classical, but, and I know a decent amount of jazz, but mostly musical theater. That's my bag of tricks as far as knowing songs and groups and singers and anything. Anyway, we get some wonderful 80s music as Marcus is getting dressed. I love it. And it comes back later on too. I love this music. I love it. I love it. So he's got to do something with the knights. And then we get a ding dong.
No, we're not there yet. We need to talk about his clothing choices. So he keeps changing his clothes from like, oh, it's too casual. Oh, that's not this enough. That's not this enough. Then he promptly puts on a button shirt and sits down and immediately wrinkles his shirt. Like, I'm like, why would you sit there in your nice pressed shirt and then sit down on your bed and then wrinkle it? So now I'm like, I don't believe that was the right shirt. I think you should go back and try again.
So we get a ding dong. And it's Miriam. They chat about blood rage. And he's upset he was never told about the blood rage.
She is not the person to go to talk about feelings. I'm not saying that she doesn't have any, but she's very blunt and scientific and black and white. She doesn't have a lot of gray areas. So when he's like, you should have told me, we've been friends forever. And she's like, I'm not family.
Exactly.
And that was like, while true, that was like the biggest bitch line ever, kind of, to me. Because it was like, we're not as close as you think we are.
We work together. That's it.
Yeah. You're just my coworker.
So yeah. So Marcus has great soundtrack for getting dressed. There's a ding dong and it's Miriam. They chat. Of course, as I said, they chat about stuff and blood rage. He's upset he was never told. He doesn't understand why Matthew didn't just kill him. And Miriam says it's because he failed to follow orders. And she basically is trying to say, look, that shows you, if nothing else, how much Matthew doesn't say I love you much. Matthew doesn't say things like that. He shows you. And then yeah, when, as Summer said, when he's like, well, what's going on, why didn't this happen, or why didn't you tell me, or why wasn't I told? And she's like, yep, I'm not talking out of school. Not my place. And then Marcus goes to Phoebe's workplace to return her scarf, still trying to prove to her that he's a vamp. He shows her the medal of the knights.
I love that. Not even that. I don't even want to talk about that yet. I just want to talk about him handing her the scarf. You left this. It feels expensive. If you are someone who's never touched anything expensive and then you do, there is a big difference between a cheap scarf and an expensive scarf. And I love that that's how he described it. He left it. It feels expensive.
So he's still trying to prove her that he's a vampire. And he shows her the medal of the Knights of, I still want to say Knights of Columbus, Knights of Lazarus. And he describes it as an organization dating back to the 12th century. He tells her, look, you research it. I'm the Grand Master. Go run your tests on it. You'll find questions. And when you're ready, you know where I am. I have answers.
Which this episode turns into the biggest exposition that this series has ever had about what vampires are. We should just call him Dr. Exposition.
So Marcus, he's at his house where Nathaniel and Sophie are staying. And so Marcus is complaining to Nathaniel about this whole thing. And Sophie comes down the stairs and it is baby time. That was a quick scene, by the way. Back to set tour. M is doing her thing, her necromancing. Rebecca appears. M says that she needs help regarding this book. and then Rebecca disappears again.
That is like the second. There are. This is the first of two seances that are ruined by Sarah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Or that. Well, Sarah ruins the second one for sure. But the first one, because she showed up right at the end of it, I don't know that she didn't ruin that one too. Like, what if her energy was like the thing that dissipated it? However, in the second one, Rebecca was for sure talking to her.
She straight up walks in the middle of the circle.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was like, come on. But not only that, but Rebecca was actually talking to her. Like, she was saying Sarah. So that's the difference between the two as far as, you know, it's very clear that she disrupted the second one and that, but not without, she was not the reason that the spirit went away per se, because the spirit was trying to talk to her.
And M is convinced that Rebecca has a message for her. Sarah's like, no, it's not safe. Higher magic is going to tempt you. It's going to show you what you want to see. It's not ever going to be anything that you're not actually pulling this. It's trying to get through, to get to make stuff.
I feel like Sarah is equating higher magic's studies with Ouija boards.
Well, we don't know what this world,
that everything on the other side is a demon waiting to get in.
Well, no, maybe not demon, because demon in this world has a different connotation.
Right. A malevolent spirit that everything, yeah.
We don't know what their stance on Ouija boards would be.
I mean, I would imagine they'd be totally pro it, but it's just another tool. So they're just using straight up magic with herbs and languages and knots and things we can't actually see Sarah do because she doesn't do the weaving. But other than that, she's speaking the words, doing the burnings and the herbs and the crystals and whatever else she has. But that's how she talks to it, because she has a way to speak to the spirits. Whereas the people who don't sometimes the tools required of laymen would be closer to Ouija, but they're not doing nearly the protective things that M does.
And, M takes it one step further. She doesn't just say, I'm going to keep doing it. She goes, I know, we could go to this sacred site outside of the safety of the castle walls. Sarah's like, no, it is showing you what, as I said, it is showing you what you want to see. It is not a good thing. It's not going to end well. Later on, Gerbert calls Isabeau.
He's such a
he's never not going to be one. And he basically says, I'm calling about these pages. If you have one of the Ashmal pages, I'm going to come to your house. I will tear it down brick by brick.
Yeah, if you don't give it to me. And not only that, she's like, I'm not afraid of you and your fancy socks.
Yeah. Later that night, M is, I think she's drinking. She's doing something. She's outside, like looking over the parapets or whatever.
She's not drinking because Isabeau takes her a glass of wine. She's like, you look like you could use this.
Oh, that's right. Isabeau brings her a drink. Isabeau comes to her and says, I shouldn't be out here.
M says I shouldn't be out there. She's like, I know you told me not to be outside.
Or maybe Isabeau comes out to her, gives her a drink. I think M says I shouldn't be out here. Yeah, because she knows it's not the safe place. Yeah. And Isabeau says, first of all, here's a drink. Second of all, never sleep on an argument. So she's not even like arguing with her.
Which is code for don't go to bed angry. It's just like a more specific version of that. Don't sleep on an argument specifically.
And then we are in Oxford. In the hospital, Sophie is a pushin'. The baby arrives pretty darn quickly. And I don't know if you noticed it, but, well, first of all, I don't know if you heard it. But second of all, even if you did hear it, I don't know if you would put it together with this. And I would not have until of the second interview with Rob. One of the things that he says, he didn't say that voices, he only uses voices in this context. But when we talked about a few times where he used the human voice, it was always in the context of either witch or witches or female power, which is, of course, combined with witches. And so if you listen in this scene and notice that these vocals, female vocals, like rise up. So as they're kind of, I don't know if it's as she's having the baby or after when she holds her, but it's definitely there because of course now we have a new witch in the world. I think it's safe to say after what Rob said to me that I can't say what he said in case you haven't listened, but some very important places, especially after this episode, are places he acknowledges feminine power and also the presence of something else, which you'll find out later on.
You can totally talk about it because guess what? This is not, it came out two episodes ago. So
I don't care. People may or may not have listened to it. I'm just saying. I don't want to
you can absolutely summarize what he said and then go back and if you want to hear more about that, go back and listen to episode 206.
I already summarized what he said. What I'm saying is I don't want to ruin episode 209 for people. Then we are with Phoebe again. Phoebe is at her workplace and she decides she had previously just shoved it in a desk drawer. Now she's like, maybe I'll look at it. So, but she doesn't look at it. She takes it to William and asks him to look at it.
She's like, I'm good, but I'm not that good. And she, and just because you are an expert in paintings doesn't mean you're an expert in all things. So he is like a jeweler extraordinaire or a metalwork or, you know, whatever he does. He's clearly, that is his thing. And she's like, you're the specialist. You tell me what this is.
I thought it was funny. He's like, leave it with me. And so she does. And then rather than go home, she just goes back to her desk and sits and waits for him. I was like, oh, so you want it that night. Okay, got it.
Maybe she thought it would be fast.
But she, as I said, she doesn't leave the building. Now, as she digs, she is still looking for Marcus stuff. She's just not looking at the metal anymore. And she, those portrait miniatures come up and she goes down to the vaults to, we don't know exactly what she's checking on, right? Maybe she wants to see what else is around the places where they were stolen, because they're already stolen. Like, there's no getting them back right now. But she goes down to the vaults, or at least that's what she says she's going to do. And as she's down there, Domenico shows up. Now, he does not announce himself as police. She thinks he's police and he does not tell her otherwise. But after he starts asking questions, she's like, that was already in my report. Who are you?
Exactly.
And the guy asks about Marcus. Like, that's sideways.
Right.
What's your name? He says. And then William.
I know you've been seeing him.
Exactly. And then William, just so what he found was so amazing.
And he just knew she was going to be down there in like the catacombs.
I think she said she was going down to the vaults. The thing is, I understand him wanting to communicate to her like, oh, this is what I believe I found, or this is the little bit of information I found on it. Fair enough. But her plan at least was, you know, she would have eventually been back up to her desk, or maybe it was after hours and he's like, look, I want to go home. Who knows?
Or it was really exciting. How often do you see something in that condition that old?
It was exciting. I just thought it was kind of timely. Interestingly timely that William catches up with her. So that's all. He comes down and he says, look, hey, I think it might be Plantagenet or even older. And Domenico's all, huh? And Phoebe, now she's already starting to get an idea. She's been doubting, but now she's like, huh? Here's the funny thing. When Domenico sees it, he's like, you know, surprised. And once she sees that he's surprised by it, that leans more into her believing Marcus. And what does she do as if she suddenly knows all the things? She says to Domenico, Marcus gave it to me. He's the Grand Master of the Knights of Lazarus.
Do you know what that means? This is the equivalent of, my boyfriend is big and mean and he'll beat you up if you're mean to me.
And he just might be a vampire, so I would watch out. Even though she doesn't know about Domenico. So Domenico out. Back at Setour, Em and Sarah make up.
They call a truce. And it's not really a truce. It's a truce saying, let's just not talk about it anymore. And then Sarah goes, no, let's go and do your voodoo. Let's go to your special place and try to get more power. You're right. We should do this. So that's not really a truce. That is like Sarah going, you win.
That's actually later. So they make up first. Now, and then back to Oxford. Miriam and Agatha have joined. The hospital room. The baby's name is Margaret. And Miriam says that she can hear. And if you listen, they have the soundtracks version of the Bloods singing.
You are not going to like just gloss over the fact that she goes, what did you name her? Margaret. And she goes, seriously?
I mean, no, because you can do that. It was funny.
Like, it was funny. It was funny because it's exactly the same thing I was talking about Miriam earlier. She's not the one you go to for fuzzy, make me feel better feelings. She's the one who's going to be blunt and a little bit rude. Seriously? Well, we like it.
And save your life. And so Miriam says the baby's blood is singing. This confirms she's a witch. She's all, hey, we got to make plans to move y'all, including little wee Miss Margaret, to Setour. Back at Setour with the aunts, they agree that Sarah is stubborn. And Sarah says that Rebecca was still alive. Rebecca and Em had been involved in or learned about higher magic. And it's something that Sarah just wasn't either into or able to do. That wasn't her gift. That wasn't her magic. And so she felt kind of left out of the higher magic. And so she then proposes a jailbreak. She goes, let's go find that site and do that thing. The site outside the castle walls. So that is going to be their plan. Back to Oxford. Marcus, again with the same 80s music, runs into Phoebe, who has come ready for answers, just as he predicted.
Right. But I'm just curious as to why she didn't just go knock on his door.
She was walking as he was leaving.
Because it looked like she was just standing there.
Well, I think she saw him as she was walking and she stopped.
Okay.
I mean, she could have walked up to him, but he left. And I'm surprised he didn't see her, though. He's a vampire. So she's ready for answers.
She says that in her research, she discovered Matthew, and Phoebe has begun to put everything together. And as they talk in that sweet little window seat, we get some of Marcus's story, right? Him being born in the 18th century, him being a soldier in the American Revolution, being reborn, etc. And she's his only human friend who knows what he is.
Sure knows how to make a girl feel special.
Right? She puts her hand up to his heart, or he takes her hand and puts it up to his heart, and he says, she finally feels a beat. It just beats really slowly. He says, it beats slower and it loves longer. Aw, the cheese. So the education of Phoebe continues, including...
Which is also the education of...
us.
All season two people, because...
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these things... all book readers know these things. Everyone who's read these books knows what he's talking about. However, a lot of these things have just been kind of glossed over or mentioned in passing, or we learn about it because we see them doing it as opposed to them actually talking about it, with the exception of, you know, when Marcus took Diana shopping for food for Matthew. But even then, they don't really talk about it. He's just like, I'll take you. I'll go do the thing. So, and when you think about it like that, he really is the intro to vampire for all the main characters.
Yeah. Because honestly, even Marcus himself is clueless about things, right? Up until last episode or two episodes ago, he didn't know about blood rage. Not only about it, he didn't know he had it. He didn't know what happened in the 18th century when he went out.
He doesn't have it. He's a carrier for it.
Oh, sorry. Well, that's true. He doesn't express it, but he expresses it. He's a carrier like Isabeau, but he was completely left purposely out of the loop by Matthew because Matthew wanted to spare him and also save him. So, it's the education of Phoebe. In recent episodes, it's been the education of Marcus slightly. So her education continues, including how the vampires are slowly dying out. And we don't get details, but we get another mention of Philippe. And he says, you know, Philippe died. He died in the 1940s. And he doesn't go into anything more than that, but he tells her that. And they include discussion about long lives, their long lives, and short human lives, almost like they're priming the pump. And what I meant by that was, I'm not going to spoil it, but if you have read Time's Convert.
Yeah, Time's Convert.
If you have read Time's Convert, you know what I'm hinting at.
They started having sex.
So anyway, what I wrote was almost like they're priming the pump, ...
They were priming the pump, but it was a different kind of pump.
And then literally as I typed it, I look up and they're in bed. So it really, I did not mean it as a euphemism. I meant it as like literally, but apparently they were doing it. So they end up in bed after the sexy time. She's like, okay, now I have this toy vampire. I want to see everything you can do. So she times him and he goes and gets ice cream and comes back. I love it. It was so sweet.
That was so funny. Like once she believes him and had like a little bit of knowledge, then it fully becomes like an episode. Okay, do you remember the TV show Heroes?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So in the first episode of Heroes, when they introduced Hayden Panettiere's character, the cheerleader, they were just like, that was test number whatever, whatever of me surviving falling off of a thing. This becomes like that. They're like, what can you do? Or if you saw the movie Shazam with Zachary Levi, who played Shazam, where he's a teenager who finds the Shazam. I don't know. He gets given the Shazam power, whatever that is. And he's like, but what do I do with it? And so he and his little buddy go through and try him doing like trials to see what he can do. And it was just kind of like that all over again, which was even more adorable because there was ice cream involved.
So they do the little timing thing and that's funny. And he tells her also about Domenico. He also says that he's going to give up the knights. And she's like, look, you have a chance to do something really good. Use the knights. You've just described to me how you guys are dying out, or all the creatures are dying out. Like, why don't, and then certain people are under, not attack, but are in danger. It's like, why can't you use the knights to help everyone for future generations? So she talks him up.
Yeah. She's like, you were born a revolutionary.
Yes, that's exactly.
Why not continue doing that?
And then back in Venice, Baldwin and Marcus are chatting. So he gets around. Baldwin tells Marcus, look, dude, I know you're not interested. Just name me the Grandmaster. I'll do it. And he's like, nope, I've decided to keep it. But Marcus still needs Baldwin's help. He tells him about Sophie and Nathaniel and the new witch baby. And he says, look, I'm going to use the knights to protect this baby and the family.
It's like Marcus is the only one who really knows how to be a member of a family. Because what Baldwin does in the next 15 minutes is 100% why most of us think he's a dick for the first two books. Well, I guess he did it in a way that he thought he was protecting family. But like, he threw Marcus completely under the bus at the first opportunity.
Of course. But before we get there...
And I know it was because he was mad about that, because he didn't get to be the leader of the Knights of Lazarus.
He's butthurt. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So he is telling him, nah, I'm going to keep it. And the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to make the world a better place. The first thing I'm going to do is protect this baby and the family. And I love this line. Baldwin's like, yeah, not so much. I don't take orders from infants. That was hysterical. I think that line is straight from the book. It's hysterical. Basically, Baldwin's like, nope, refuses to help. So the next scene, we're not quite.
No, not even that. Before that, you missed the best line. I was when Marcus says, stand now, why Philippe was so disappointed in you. I was like, burn.
Oh, yes.
That's worse.
That was like, because you knew that hit him right. Because the reason he wants the Knights of Lazarus is to feel closer to Philippe, because he was Philip's eldest remaining child of his bloodline. And I think he wants it to feel closer to his dad, and for he's always coveted doing that. And so for him not to get it, and for it to have been given to Matthew, and then it now to have gone on in Matthew's bloodline instead of back to where he thinks it belongs, it's a total like kick in the face. But for him to go back and say like, now I know why Philippe was so disappointed in you, is just like, that is just like poking. And that is honestly, that is 100% sibling style fighting. That is, I know the button and I'm pushing it, and I'm going to push it, and I'm going to push it, and I'm going to push it until you leave me alone.
Gerbert and Domenico are chatting. And as they chat, Domenico is saying he wants to change terms.
Yeah.
And as they're chatting, they look out and Gerbert sees Marcus leaving the congregation. So that's all we see in here. The next scene is Gerbert and Baldwin.
Oh, come on. No, because before then, as he leaves the room, he looks across at Marcus and he goes, impudent. Like, it was so funny. Do you not remember that?
I mean, there's a lot of name calling. I don't take notes of every name call.
I know, but I definitely remember the name calling, especially when characters who you've not heard curse before throw out an F-bomb.
Oh, Gerbert?
Yeah. And he was like, impudent. And I was like,
that's rich of him. Yeah.
I did not expect that. I did not expect it. And I enjoyed it.
So then we see Gerbert and Baldwin, and they're all, what's up? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it in the family. And he's like, nope. And Baldwin turns. He tells Gerbert everything about the witch baby.
To be fair, and
he's butthurt,
but it's not even that. He's giving him that as a way to not give him the information he has about Isabeau.
That's true. I didn't consider that. That's true.
It was a bargaining thing where he's like, I'm not going to give you what you really want, which is the means to get the de Clermonts.
What you really, really want, what you want.
So I'm not giving him his Spice Girl rewards, but what I'm saying is that
I see that.
Is that instead of giving him the thing he really wants, what he really, really wants, he is giving him something different to like lead him off the trail.
So he's not, I couldn't and wouldn't call it a red herring, because it's not. It's a true thing. It's a true thing that's dangerous for the people he's shoving under this new bus, right?
But he doesn't know them, so he doesn't care. And they're demons who are beneath his notice.
And a witch. But the point is, they're not vampires, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's something, you're right. It is, is it wrong? Absolutely. Is it bad? Absolutely. Is it going to potentially kill people? Absolutely.
It's so much juicier, though, when you think about it.
But.
It's such a juicier little subplot.
But what does he do? That's true. I think it's a very good thing to notice is that what he doesn't tell him, and that is what he knows about Marcus. So that's, I'm glad you said that. So he's actually still, he's pissed, he's butthurt. So he totally gives up the goods, but he's still wants to protect. I don't think that he wants to necessarily protect Marcus. He doesn't want to give info about the knights and blood rage to Gerbert. That's his biggest thing.
He doesn't want to give any ammunition against the de Clermonts, because right now they really do run the congregation.
Oh, yeah.
And they run the Knights of Lazarus. And if they get discredited,
then both could be gone.
Yeah. So then they're going to lose their position of power within the community. So he is not only protecting Isabeau, as his father had initially created the Knights of Lazarus for, he's protecting his position within the congregation, because he's like, I like being important.
Yeah. And if I can't be a grandmaster, then at least I'll keep this doing here.
Exactly.
There's a lot of, like, this is, besides education, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of a lot of people. There's so many mini scenes, M-I-N-I scenes going on here. So with Gerbert and Domenico, Gerbert and Baldwin, Domenico and Marcus, Gerbert and Knox, it's redonk. So now we're with Domenico and Marcus. Domenico speaks of the link between the Oxford murders of now, of the 21st century, and he says it might be linked to the 16th century. He's also trying to make a deal with Marcus, he says, and poor Domenico is just not having the best day.
Here's the thing. What Domenico has and or thinks he has is not as valuable as he thinks it is. And that's where he keeps coming. And that's going to, I believe, come into play later on in the series, is that he's trying so hard to be a major power player. He's on the congregation, but he's literally third string. He's not your de Clermont and he's not Gerbert. So he is the third from the congregation, but he's like everyone's whipping child. He's the redheaded stepchild of the congregation. So he's trying to make a play to have more power.
And he just doesn't have goods.
No, he just does. He thinks what he has
is big.
Is bigger.
Yeah.
And that other people don't know it, or that the people who know it will be scared enough to try to protect it with things and power and whatever. And so that's what he told.
And give him something.
And give him. Yeah. And that's what he was saying. And I don't think he wants to be a part of the Knights of Lazarus or in charge of it at all. But he's like, what can you do for me as the Grand Master? If I own the Grand Master of the Knights of Lazarus, I don't have to have any of the responsibility, but I can get things done that I want done.
Well, we know what he wants, at least at one point. He wants Venice.
But he wants to renegotiate the terms, because clearly there's something else he wants other than just Venice. He's like, because he thinks what he has is worth more. Because right now he knows where he knows, and he's the only one really who knows where Matthew and Diana are outside of the de Clermont family.
So then we have a scene with Gerbert and Knox. I told you, these people get around. And Gerbert tells Knox, as we knew he would, about the witch baby. And Knox is gagging for it.
He almost seems not gagging for it. He's almost like, ugh. This is not what I really want to do with my time, because I told you I'm looking for these pages.
Are you saying this is not what he really, really wants?
It's not. This is not his Spice Girl moment.
Got it. Okay.
He's doing it because it is something new and intriguing, right? And if this is true, this changes everything. And that's the whole reason why Marcus wanted to keep it quiet. So if he knows, it changes everything for everyone, because, and everything everyone knows about, like they've said in the series, everything everyone knows about creatures' genetics as they know right now. And it changes everything. If a witch can give birth to a demon who then gives birth to a witch with another demon. So it's like, when you think about it like that, it is intriguing. He's not interested, but it's not what he wants to focus on right now.
Interesting. And it's related to the book in that it's potentially information that talks about the source of creatures and genetics. Okay, it's tangentially related. However, I can also see what you're saying in that it's like, although Gerbert is not the boss of him, Gerbert's like, look, there's this witch baby. You got to go take care of this, right? It's your thing now. This is your issue. I found this out. I'm bringing it to you, because you're the witch, one of the witch reps here on the congregation. This is now you. And so yeah, it's not that Knox isn't interested. He's interested. And yes, it could have a lot of meaning. It has a lot of meaning that he'll probably want to study. But he's like, I see what you're saying in terms of wanting to get back to the book. He's like, okay, I'm going to go take care of this little stupid little child, get it out of the way, or as he does, warn them. And then he's like, I'm going to go make my presence known and then get back to the work.
But that was the thing. He didn't even really want to take the baby.
No,
because he didn't take the baby. He's like, enjoy it while you have it, because I'm going to get it eventually. Like he's saying right there, I see you. I know you. I know what's going on. This is not as important to me as what I'm doing right now. But just so you know, I know.
Yeah. So he's basically making a checking trip.
Well, he's trying to say, okay, Agatha, I know. And that's the other thing that isn't really touched on much by the people who are discovering this out within the congregation, is that the grandmother of this baby is on the congregation. So it's like, not only.
That's true, that no one mentions that.
Not even brought up. I mean, they know it because obviously she shows up at the hospital room and, you know, they confront each other about it. And, you know, she's away from my family.
And this is completely new for the series, right?
Because the baby, okay, in the book,
baby was in a hospital. That's why.
No, the baby was given birth to in Septor.
That's what I'm saying. This is all completely new for the show.
The baby is completely protected. And we don't even see a whole lot of the baby, like, in the book. Like, the largest scene that I recall of the baby recently, well, during my nocturnal audiobook listens, is at the end. When, you know, people are coming back from the past and they're reconnecting and finding out what happens and what's going on and how they're going to move forward. That's the biggest scene with the baby in it that I can recall at this point.
So speaking of baby, we're in Oxford and in comes Knox, who uses his magic ball to make the parents fall asleep, because it's just the parents and the baby right now. And he puts the baby asleep while he feels over her and censors her power or some such thing. And as he's in the middle of it, Agatha comes in all, what the fuh?
Exactly.
Well, not only that. And he's like, no, they're okay. They'll live. They're just asleep. I'm just here. Like, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just here. I mean, he's tough-ish. He's like, I'm just here to confirm the child's existence. You know she's going to have to be raised by her own species. So I will be seeing you at some point.
They just need a Hogwarts.
And we'll come for her.
All they just need to do is have a Hogwarts.
Yeah, that's true.
Because then they can go get their training. And Hogwarts for the wayward witches born outside of the regular. You know what I mean? They just need a place where they can be trained. There's no reason to rip families apart. This is dumb.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's true. And then, almost done, outside Sept Tour, the ants make their way to the ancient sacred site. The same one, by the way, that Diana was...
Which is Artemis's... It's Artemis's temple or her ruins or whatever.
They get ready and light their candles. Rebecca is summoned. And once she appears, as Summer said, she kind of... Sarah sees her and Rebecca speaks to Sarah. Sarah is overcome with love and grief that she jumps up in the middle of the circle. And it's ruined.
Just run into it.
And that's it, basically.
You know, and I wonder, now, again, this scene is not from the books. And I wonder if having it or Sarah be a part of it in this type of
ruinous way.
Yeah, I'm like, if she hadn't ruined it, do we think
the thing would have happened?
She could have been more successful.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Ah, la la. I don't know. Maybe so.
I mean, in the context of the show. Why'd they make everything Sarah's fault?
Final scene, 1591 London. Diana is asleep with her hand on the book. She dreams of this large, beautiful tree, which it looks like it's starting to shrivel, but it's actually just becoming less leafy and more
like irony, isn't it?
Yeah, and more, well, just more like, I guess, woody. And you hear that the sound of screaming comes up, and then as it goes in, just before it ends the scene in her dream, you're seeing heads in the tree and at the ends of branches and everything. And so it's supposed to be a tree of creatures, right? It ends with Matthew saying, "Is everything all right?" And she responds, "I don't think so."
What do you think she thinks it is?
I cannot answer that, but I know what I think. I know what is making her feel Funky Town.
But that's a spoiler.
It's always a spoiler. And that was episode 208. Join us next time when we will be discussing episode 209. There are only two left. Two left.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.